Here it is.
From deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, in following the adventures of our federal government in trying to computerize, yet another development rears its pretty little head. The U.S. Census Bureau faces cost overruns up to $2 billion. That's B as in Boston, as they used to say, on an initiative that is supposed to replace paper-based data collection methods with special handheld devices for the upcoming 2010 census. Yeah, that's going to be exciting. And it's so hard because nobody in the private sector uses special computerized handheld devices. So you're really... The Bureau has not implemented longstanding recommendations from the Government Accountability Office and may therefore be forced to scrap the entire program. Hey, $2 billion? What the heck? Harris Corporation, the contractor associated with this initiative, was awarded a $600 million contract to develop the handhelds and related software. Commerce Secretary Gutierrez said a couple years ago, there's no question about the Census Bureau and Harris could have done things differently and better over the past couple years. The GAO characterized the handheld initiative saying, without effective management of key risks, the program faces an increased probability the system would not be delivered on schedule or perform as expected. Okay, so maybe you should just report your existence to the FedEx guy next time he shows up, because he has a handheld thing that somehow works. I don't know. From another part of the government, an admission and a wonderful new phrase. You know about the conflict in Basra. It's actually made the news this week. I don't know how that happened. I guess Hillary and Obama were traveling. Well, he was on vacation. I don't know about her. Anyway, yes, you've heard about the flare-up of hostilities in Basra. So according to the Washington Post, this comes from a senior administration official on the subject. Quote, our intelligence in that area, meaning the south of Iraq, is far less than we would like. We don't have any forces there. We're operating with a good dose of opaqueness, unquote. Well, that could really be the banner on the aircraft carrier for the whole deal. A good dose of opaqueness. Thank you, sir, whoever you are. And, of course, you don't know who you are, or at least we don't know who you are. And you want to keep it that way. And, ladies and gentlemen, also at the top of the broadcast, because of all the excitement about HD radio, and if there's HD radio, can HD toasters be far behind? Or HD coasters, for that matter? Everything's HD now. The radio business or the radio manufacturing business has already started an ad campaign on regular radio for HD radio. I know, it's too confusing. But here's what the digital wonderland in radio promises. The country station 92.5 The Wolf, KWLI in Denver, Colorado, has launched 92.5 HD. The channel will feature the station's morning stars, Jesse and Shotgun. Hey, which do you think's the straight guy? Which do you think's the funny guy? I know, it's so obvious. And it will feature them nonstop, 24 hours a day. The channel will officially be labeled the Jesse and Shotgun All the Time radio channel. The four-hour show will recycle on the new channel. How many times? Well, five times. That's the magic of HD. You can hear the morning guys at night. Hello, welcome to the show.
sunshine won't ever kiss no down. He's got the dirtiest job in town. I'm bending low at the people's feet on the windy corner of the dirty street. When I asked him while he shined his shoes, how he keeps from getting the blues, he grinned and he shook his little head about the shoes shine bragging. And he said,
you know,
get a rhythm.
When you get the blues, get a rhythm. When you get the blues, get a rock and roll, fit it in your bones.
Tap on your toes
and loose, there you go. Get a rhythm. When you get the blues.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And ladies and gentlemen, the cover-ups of the cover-up of the cover-up is allegedly continuing, at least according to the people in New Orleans who are concerned about this. They may be alone. The Professional Organization for Engineers, who build the nation's roads, dams, and bridges, has been accused by fellow engineers of covering up catastrophic design flaws while investigating national disasters. After the World Trade Center attack in 2001 and the levee failures in New Orleans in 2005, the federal government paid the American Society of Civil Engineers to investigate what went wrong. Critics now accuse the group of covering up engineering mistakes, downplaying the need to alter building standards, and using the investigations to protect engineers and government agencies from lawsuits. Aside from that, Mrs. Lincoln, they did a similar accusations arose after both disasters. The most recent allegations from the New Orleans organization levees.org have pressured the organization, the American Society of Civil Engineers, to convene an independent panel to investigate. They're going to investigate themselves because it worked for the Corps of Engineers. And as the ship, if it either sinks or pulls into port, some crew members are taking early departure. Virginia's Tom Davis, the ranking Republican on the House Oversight Committee, who is retiring. No, I don't mean that's a character aspect. He's very outgoing, actually, but he's leaving Congress. He told the Washington Independent that the Iraq War was, quote, a war we fought where we weren't ready for prime time. Unquote. I know, you know, there are people, ladies and gentlemen, there are people on this side of the microphone of this broadcast who think that there's no greater slam at the administration than comparing it to Lorne Michaels. Davis is saying we're still not doing things right. Not saying it was once a fiasco, but the surge has solved everything. He was specifically discussing the government's reliance on private contractors to fight the war. Quote, a lot of decisions were made by people in comfortable desks in Washington. I think he means at comfortable desks. Maybe they were hiding inside. I don't know. not trained, experienced officers on the ground making decisions, unquote. It's a Republican saying the decisions were being made in Washington, not by the people on the ground. But no, weren't we told that? Davis doesn't have a problem with private contractors waging the war. Well, he says contracting is a fact of life as long as government doesn't pay top dollar. But the problem is the lack of contractor oversight, which should be done by those people in Washington, you'd think, wouldn't you? Yeah. Tom Davis, ladies and gentlemen, telling the truth as he skedaddles on out. Or telling what he thinks is the truth now. Who knows? Who knows what he'll think later? Now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
First of all, this from the BBC.
You may have heard this a little earlier in the program.
The award-winning screenwriter Abby Mann has died at the age of 80. He won an Academy Award in 1961 for Judgment at Nuremberg. Abby Mann also won several Emmys, including one in 1973 for a film which featured a police detective called Kim. The character on whom a long-running TV series was eventually based.
Now, there were two bits of radio history being made there. One of them, which I'm sure you'll recognise, was Charlotte Green, who was tipped over into hilarity by somebody whispering in her ear that the first bit sounded a bit like a bee buzzing in a bottle.
And it wasn't either of us, it should be said.
It was not either of us, no. We were entirely innocent in this. And we've been inundated with hundreds of emails asking us to play that again. Apparently the BBC press office is in meltdown with calls about it, and we hope the family of Abby Mann will understand it. Obviously it wasn't intended as any slight towards him. The first bit of sound was, in fact, although it may not have sounded like it, the oldest known recording of a human voice. It's a woman singing Claire de Lune in 1860.
That's all it took to put her over the line. But wait, there's another apology from Britain as well, from the head of British Airways.
I apologise to anyone and everyone that was disrupted as a result. We clearly disappointed a lot of our customers yesterday, and I sincerely apologise for that.
But there's more disruption today. I mean, can we expect this to go on how long? A week? 2 weeks?
Well, some of the disruption we face today is as a result of the difficulties we encountered yesterday.
So what are you telling your passengers? Stay away for a day or two if they can?
No, I sincerely apologise if they've been disrupted. I would encourage everybody to check on BA.com for the latest information.
So you're confident you can still get your planes away, that people should turn up?
Well, we're working hard to do that.
That's because of the disastrous opening of Terminal 5 at Heathrow Airport in London. You're sorry. Dateline Vancouver, 24 First Nations protesters rallied outside Easter services at Vancouver's Roman Catholic Cathedral last week, demanding to know where the bodies of children who died in residential schools are located. Friends and family of the disappeared served the church with a similar protest on March 16th. This was designed to draw attention to the plight of children who were forced into both Catholic and Protestant residential schools earlier in Canadian history. Removing children from their culture and their families is a profound moral concern, said the Archbishop. It is especially painful to know that some children suffered sexual and physical abuse at the hands of their teachers and caregivers. As Archbishop of Vancouver, I express my deep regret and I apologize for any wrongs committed here. So a stolen generation and some abuse. Cute. It's like Canada combined Australia and America into one lovely thing. Luxury cruise line Silver Sea has apologized to passengers after it took them on a Panama Canal tour in total darkness. Silver Sea is a luxury cruise line. It apologized for taking passengers through the Panama Canal on a voyage that was billed as the Panama Canal Experience. However, the company will not increase its offer of a 20% discount on a future trip. It blames the nighttime sailing on circumstances beyond its control. Meaning that they don't control when the sun goes down, I guess. Barack Obama's advisor Gordon Fisher invoked the Monica Lewinsky scandal on his blog while defending another advisor's likening of Bill Clinton to Joe McCarthy, saying Bill Clinton has put a stain on his legacy much worse than the one on Monica's blue dress. He has since apologized for the comment. I hope my readers will accept my apology and we can move on to the very important issues facing our state and country. Thank you. On my individual blog, I made a stupid comment. I sincerely apologize for the tasteless and gratuitous comment. South Korea's Food Safety Agency said it is investigating how a suspected rat, ladies and gentlemen, could be a possum, came to be found in a U.S.-made frozen vegetable product after a customer complaint. The Korea Food and Drug Administration ordered the local unit of U.S. retailer Costco, which was selling the products made by the U.S.-based Columbia Foods Company, it is a globalized economy, to immediately recall and destroy the product named Willow Wind Organic Mixed Vegetables. A consumer complaint to Costco said a foreign substance that was suspected to be a rat was found in the product, according to the agency. The agency is probing how the foreign substance was included in the product. In a brief press release, Costco's Korean unit apologized. We would like to express our deepest apologies for causing inconvenience to our customers. That's what it is when you find a rat in your organic vegetables. An inconvenience. Maybe it was an organic rat. Celine Dion apologized to Australian fans this week after a persistent respiratory infection forced her to postpone more concerts in Sydney. Her doctors have urged further rest for the Canadian singer in order to be fully recovered. She'd already postponed concerts in Melbourne and Brisbane due to her illness earlier this week. She said in her statement she'd been looking forward to doing these shows for so long and apologized for the postponements. I'm really sorry to disappoint my fans this weekend, but I can't wait to see them on the new dates. You know what? I can't either. From the Los Angeles dog trainer. An article in Thursday Section A on the Time. Ooh. This is. They're correcting the correction of the correction. An article in Thursday Section A on the Times plan to investigate its March 17th report on rapper Tupac Shakur, a report which they're going to apologize for moments from now here on the broadcast, gave the wrong first name for the lawyer for rap talent manager James Rosemond. He's Jeffrey Lichtman, not Mark. Reporter Chuck Phillips and his supervisor, deputy managing editor Mark Duvossin, issued statements of apology this week after the Times took withering criticism for the Shakur article. The criticism came first from the Smoking Gun website, which said the newspaper had been the victim of a hoax, and then from subjects of the story who said they had been defamed. And ladies and gentlemen, it's hard to defame a rapper. In relying on documents I now believe to be fake, I failed to do my job, Phillips said. I'm sorry. His editor added, quote, we should not have let ourselves be fooled. I deeply regret that we let our readers down. No, come on, be fooled. It's the LA Times. We should not have let ourselves be fooled. Good policy. The Henry County, Georgia man booted off the county's transit system because of his weight will be allowed back on county buses. Officials have apologized to David Washington for their earlier decision to ban him from the system. He uses a motorized wheelchair because of complications following knee replacement surgery. Why would his knees have to be replaced? Because he weighs over 400 pounds. Bus driver said Washington was straining the lift system on the county's buses. Citing a 600-pound limit set by the Americans with Disabilities Act, county officials have ordered Washington off their buses because his wheelchair adds 100. Now they've reversed that decision, and Washington will be a passenger again. Jean-Claude Jobe, a French professor who administered growth hormone later found to cause Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, apologized to families of victims for his role in the tragedies. The infections with Creutzfeldt-Jakob came from human growth hormone treatments that were developed by a process called hypophyse, using pituitary glands from the brains of cadavers. CJD is a very rare and incurable degenerative neurological disorder that's ultimately fatal. The first symptom of CJD is rapidly progressive dementia. The families of French children who suffered and died from the disease caused by their treatment testified at hearings in Paris about the growth hormone. That's the human equivalent of mad cow disease. The best minds In France, the parents were told had developed the treatments and they should feel confident in the care their children were receiving. The medicines were manufactured at the Institut Pasteur, the most prestigious medical body in France. Later, the French families spoke of being totally abandoned by the French medical establishment. Professor Job asked pardon from the families and said he had also asked forgiveness from God for the error. But he defended himself against charges of negligence, saying no decision was taken lightly by him, but by a committee of his French colleagues. It's my colleagues. Blame them. Dateline Grand Junction, Colorado. Hundreds of crosses memorializing U.S. soldiers killed in Iraq were put in trash bags hours after they erected on a campus by an anti-war group. The crosses were removed and placed in trash bags to be stored at the grounds department, said Mallory Rice, an official of Mesa State College. They were taken away because of community complaints. This was a very upsetting sight for some of our members. A campus official said the removal of the crosses was a misunderstanding, and the groundskeeper thought the display was unauthorized. The groundskeeper apologized to the group for the mistake and helped them replace the 400 crosses. North Dakota State University is investigating complaints about a campus skit in which a white student in blackface portrayed Barack Obama receiving a lap dance. We're trying to find out the right approaches for accountability, but at the same time try to heal wounds that have occurred and allow the campus to move ahead, said North Dakota State University's Dean of Students and apparently archivist of cliches, Jana Stoskopf. The skit involving the Saddle and Sirloin Club was performed at the Mr. NDSU pageant, which raises money for diabetes research. The Minneapolis Star Tribune reports that the club, a co-ed group for students interested in agriculture, have publicly apologized for their actions. The sorority which put on the event, which was not part of the skit, also apologized. And finally, ladies and gentlemen, Florida has become the sixth United States state to apologize for slavery. Both chambers of the Florida legislature adopted a resolution this week expressing, quote, profound regret for the shameful chapter in this state's history, unquote. The resolution notes Florida sanctioned and enforced slavery in one of its most brutal and dehumanizing forms from 1822, a year after Florida became a territory, until after the end of the Civil War. Five other states have apologized for slavery, including Alabama, Maryland, New Jersey, North Carolina, and Virginia. The Florida resolution cites state laws from the 1800s saying that, quote, any slave duly convicted of robbery or burglary shall suffer death or have his or her ears nailed to posts and there stand for 1 hour and receive 30 lashes on his or her bare back at the discretion of the court, unquote. What the hell kind of place are they running there? Abu Ghraib? The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And now, no, can't be. No, it's not, as a matter of fact. It's this. Sometimes the CD machine can't read. Tales of Airport Security, ladies and gentlemen, for you. Dear Mr. Shearer, writes Kelly, I'm writing to share a recent experience I had while traveling recently. I know it's redundant, but it's repetitive. I was leaving from the Albany, New York airport. As I was moving through the security line, a woman stepped in front of me. She politely excused herself, and I let her ahead of me. She was wearing a conservative dark wool suit, and I immediately recognized her as a flight attendant. Once I unpacked my laptop and put my coat on the belt, it dawned on me that she did not have any obvious identification visible other than a very nice suit. As we retrieved our bags on the other side, the security officer watching the scanner asked her if the corkscrew in her bag had a knife blade. She said, "No, it's a standard United corkscrew." The security officer picked up her bag and gave it to her without looking any further. She took her bag and walked off. That evening, I scanned the news. There was no mention of anyone threatening a flight crew with a corkscrew, so I guess it worked out okay. But I have been on the lookout for a new dark suit. Those things are dynamite. Kelly. Tales of Airport Security, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
How many times have you heard someone say, if I had his money, I'd do things my way? Oh, but little they know, and it's hard to find one rich man in ten with a satisfied mind. Yeah. Oh. Once I was waiting in fortune and fame, everything that I dreamed of, get a start in life's game. But suddenly it happened, I lost every dime. But I'm richer by far, with a satisfied mind. When my life is over and my time has run out, my friends and my loved ones, I'll need that, no doubt. But one thing is for certain, when it comes my time, I'll leave here for certain with a satisfied mind. I got a satisfied mind, but I got a satisfied mind. Well, I don't have no money, but I got a satisfied mind. Oh yeah, satisfied mind.
This is Le Show, and now, ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble. There's so much of it. You almost wish we had three networks on cable television devoted to the news, because then we'd know this stuff. For several years, reconstruction in Afghanistan has been a drawing board and drawing pin approach, with aid delivery overwhelmingly focused on numbers, quick delivery, high visibility, meeting benchmarks, a production line approach to the rebuilding of a nation. This according to the Asia Times. However, the short-term, low-cost approach of the donor community is coming under increasing criticism from development experts. In a report released this week by Agbar, ACBAR, an umbrella organization for non-governmental organizations working in Afghanistan. Oxfam, a member of ACBAR, called for a change of approach, saying, quote, too much of aid has been prescriptive and driven by donor priorities rather than responsive to evident Afghan needs and preferences. Oxfam points out in the first 2 years after the ouster of the Taliban, the per capita expenditure on rebuilding the shattered country was $57 per capita compared to $679 per capita in Bosnia. Even this money does not come without strings attached. Half of it is tide aid, which it's not the shipping of laundry detergent. It's aid that has to be spent in the purchase of goods and services from the donor country. A CorpWatch report states that many development experts find the process by which aid contracts and loans are awarded to be counterproductive. International aid agencies distribute aid money to developing countries and have designed a system that is efficient in funneling money back to the wealthy donor countries without providing sustainable development to the poor states. Oh, and the poor states. I wonder what the per capita figure is for New Orleans. Dateline London, the British Ministry of Defense is admitting breaching the human rights of an Iraqi man who died in British custody in Basra. This according to the BBC, quoting the defense secretary. The Ministry of Defense would also admit breaching the rights of eight other Iraqi men at a high court hearing due to take place this coming week. This will pave the way for compensation claims by Baba Musa's family and others that may run to six-figure sums. Baba Musa, he's a 26-year-old hostel receptionist who was beaten to death by British troops in September of 2003. The government is admitting substantive breaches of parts of the European Convention on Human Rights, which protect the right to life and prohibit torture. Armed Services Minister Bob Ainsworth said acts of abuse had been carried out by a very small minority of British troops. He said he deeply regretted their actions and offered his apologies to Mr. Musa's family and the other Iraqi detainees. It's like they're like us. It's like our policies really were joined at the hip. You know, a few bad apples, improper equipment, supplies, the whole deal. It's like a policy. From the Independent newspaper in London, because it's Sunday, let's get scared day, mobile phones could kill far more people than smoking or asbestos, a study by an award-winning cancer expert has concluded. He says people should avoid using them whenever possible, and that governments in the mobile phone industry must take immediate steps to reduce exposure to the radiation. The study by Dr. Vinny Khurana is the most devastating indictment yet published of the health risks, drawing on growing evidence that using handsets for 10 years or more can double the risk of brain cancer. Cancers take at least a decade to develop, invalidating official safety assurances based on earlier studies, which included few of any people who'd used the phones for that long. Earlier this year, the French government warned against the use of mobile phones by children. Germany also advises its people to minimize handset use, and the European Environment Agency has called for exposures to be reduced. Professor Khurana is a neurosurgeon who's received 14 awards over the past 16 years. What happened to those other 2 years, babe? He's published more than 36 scientific papers, reviewed more than 100 studies on the effects of mobile phones. He's put the results on a brain surgery website. Yeah, but to find it, it's like brains. Paper based on the research is currently being peer-reviewed. He concludes there's a significant increasing body of evidence for a link between mobile phone usage and certain brain tumors. He believes this will be definitively proven in the next decade, noting that malignant brain tumors represent a life-ending diagnosis. He says, we're currently experiencing a reactively unchecked and dangerous situation. On the subject of British policy towards soldiers in wartime, in this war, and its similarity to the American policy, there's this from the Times of London. A soldier who was crushed to death when an 8-ton Spartan armored vehicle collapsed on his head while he was trying to repair it would have survived if the army had provided proper wooden supports. It's from a coroner who investigated the death. He would not have died, said the coroner. if there had been only a couple of wooden planks available to place under the vehicle as a safeguard while he worked underneath it. The only cushioning support available, the inquest was told, were old bits of pallet wood. The jack that was supplied could lift a Ford Cortina, but not a Spartan. Said the coroner, the training and equipment were inadequate for the repair of this vehicle. The soldier's death was contributed to by neglect. Unquote. It's just bad equipment, that's all. You know, fight on. The future of buffalo mozzarella cheese, one of the culinary world's most prized products. You know about this? Is at stake after France and Singapore joined a ban on sales of the product as tests are being carried out at Italian farms for cancer-causing dioxins. Italy is home, of course, to the $500 million a year industry, announced a recall of products from 25 companies. The French reaction was criticized as emotional by Italian producers, who said that 83 buffalo farms in the south of the country had been quarantined. The British Food Standards Agency said a supermarket ban was not necessary. But Japan and South Korea have already put imports of the cheese on hold. Farmers in the Campania region remain nervous, and sales plummeted in Italy. Investigations are continuing into whether the chronic waste disposal problem in Naples, linked to the local mafia, yes, there is still one in Italy, it's not just on TV, led to illegal disposal of toxic material in the countryside, in turn passing into the animal food chain. With dumps in the Naples area full, locals have burnt or buried rubbish in the surrounding fields. Health officials said industrial waste was also set ablaze, spreading fumes that in some cases contained toxic chemicals. That's how it got in to the buffaloes. David Kaye, the United States weapons inspector, gave an interview to the German magazine Der Spiegel. He's asked, "You led the effort to follow up on the claims made by Curveball, the asylum seeker from Iraq who told German intelligence that Saddam Hussein was building mobile biological weapons laboratories. Do you remember the first time you began to doubt his story?" Says Kaye, "The real shock was that the CIA had never spoken to him directly. To this day, I still don't understand how you can hang the most dramatic part of a case for war on an individual no American agent has ever directly debriefed." There's more, but not right now. And on the subject of Iraq, from outside the bubble, Fred Kagan, a fellow at the American Enterprise Institute and father of the surge, told the British newspaper The Telegraph, "British forces have an obligation to step up when needed, and it sure looks like they're needed in Basra. It's rather a watershed moment in the Anglo-American alliance. I understand your prime minister has already said the special relationship is over. There's an issue here of fulfilling your obligations as an ally." Unquote. His fellow surge architect, retired U.S. General Jack Keane, also voiced doubts to the Telegraph that the Iraqi security forces would be able to pacify Basra unassisted. He says the situation in Basra has deteriorated since the British pulled out. Their comments are unlikely to embarrass the government and anger British commanders in Basra, who have insisted their policy of scaling down their presence is to encourage Iraqi forces to take over. There were reports today, Sunday, that the British did one thing. They fired an artillery round from their base outside the city into Basra. But so far, British troops have just been sitting in their base while the fighting goes on. The president of the United States gave a speech this week hailing the progress in Iraq and saying the fighting in Basra is a defining moment for Iraqi Prime Minister Maliki. Even though there are reports that the prime minister undertook the attack on Shiite militias in Basra without telling the United States in advance. And there are other reports that suggest his motivation for doing it is that he's attacking, or his forces are attacking, militias from a Shiite faction different from his Shiite faction. Yeah. I think it's time for a phone call.
Fair dink amigo. What the H-E-double hockey sticks kind of code name is that, 43? Hey, 41, playing host to the Australian Prime Minister. I think that's all the Australian the Secret Service knows. I know it's all the Australian I know, so... Interesting fella, this Mr. Rudd. Yeah, good sense of humor. Mm-hmm. I called him Rudy the Rudd-Nosed Reindeer once. He actually chuckled.
So good meetings?
Oh, you know, how good can it be when I'm having to congratulate an ally who's pulling his troops out of Iraq, congratulate him for living up to his campaign promise. And that's like congratulating him for kissing his sister.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Sprout, maybe our friend Mr. Rudd read last summer's National Intelligence Estimate, you know, the one that said that different groups of Shiites in the South were going to start jockeying for power.
There's different Shiites? Look, 401, way I see it, Dick Cheney told me that the NIE wasn't worth the paper it was redacted on. Sort of getting a little weary of the agency's politicized pose of non-politicization. We got a war to fight here, sir, and I sort of think we should all be playing on the same team. You know, that's the same thing I thought when I owned the Texas Rangers. Of course, they were all playing for the same team, so...
43, can't say I didn't tell you.
Yeah,
because not telling you is... not what I did.
Yeah.
But the agency didn't appreciate taking the bullet over the pre-war intelligence, mm-hmm. and they have a way of serving up their revenge, not just cold, but flash frozen.
Yes, sir.
And as far as the NIE is concerned, mm-hmm. in this case, as Henry Kissinger once said, it had the added advantage of being true. The Shiites in the South are having a little power struggle.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not so little. Maybe in Baghdad, too, but...
Yeah, look, see, maybe it never occurred to the people who think keeping Valerie Plame's name secret was more important than keeping the details of our enhanced interrogation procedurings secret, but Mr. Maliki's our guy there. Mm-hmm. He's a good man. Mm-hmm. I've looked into his eyes, and I didn't see Vladimir Putin's soul. You know, might be worth our while to pull together, stand behind this good man up to and until the time comes to move on. Don't you think, 41? Or am I just preaching to the chorus girls here?
Hey, listen, 43.
Yeah.
Our British friends don't seem to be getting out and helping your friend Mr. Maliki either. Mm-hmm. Looks like they're just hunkering down on their base. Almost Italian style. Almost as if they knew something.
Yeah. See, what they know is that this is a defining moment for the Maliki government. And it wouldn't be nearly as defining if they had British troops leading the fight for him. It might be almost utterly undefining.
Be a defining moment if the Brits don't come in and your friend Mr. Maliki has to make a humiliating deal to stop the fighting.
You know what this is, 41? I know what this is. This is the soft underbelly of low expectations.
You've got the Brits and the Australians marching away from you.
Yeah.
And you're picking up the support of the French. Somehow, son, that doesn't sound like we're holding a winning hand right now.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Mm. The Lord has a bigger Rolodex than some people think.
Whole spectacle might lead some folks to think the Shiite ceasefire was the surge. As soon as it's over, it's Katie bar the door.
Oh, look, it's not Katie bar the door. It's not even old doctor. You know, 41, John McCain's just been over there. You know what he told me? That market that he pretended it was safe enough to walk around last year, now it really is.
Well, it was until this new upsurge or unsurge.
Well, I mean, he had to leave sometime, but this good man is standing with us at some considerate peril to his own electoral outcome.
What is that? We're all supposed to say now, I honor his service to our country, of course. But another week of this is going to send his poll numbers down to Ron Paul country.
Well, of course.
Of course,
never pay attention to polls.
But Ralph Nader country, even.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I suppose you and your wise friends in the foreign politics establishment just happen to have a plan for a better way to deal with this little blip.
Sprout long ago stopped having advice on hand in case you asked. Just concerned, that's all.
Yeah.
You know, in a different situation, you could move attention from the war to the economy, or vice versa.
Yeah, yeah, but now I don't have either vice or versa. I know what you're saying, 41. I just reject the saying of it. I've heard very encouraging reports about the situation over in Iraq from sources as diversified as Dick Cheney and Dick Cheney's assistant. Mm-hmm. And as far as the economy is concerned, I like what Ben Bernanke told me. He said it's not the beginning of the end. It's the fight and the dog.
Ben said that.
Well, that's the justification I got from him on the secure video cons this week. By the way, hey, did you know, realize I'm going to go down in history as the most video conferenced president in American history?
Son, you know, Barr and I are proud of every accomplishment of yours, especially or even that one. Right. Just telling you, some of my so-called wise men, as you call them, are getting very antsy to start speaking out about our foreign policy. Some of them want to go public before the election.
Scowcroft?
Mm. Name and no name. Just would like some little indication that you and the agency aren't going to continue to squabble like a bunch of Shiites. Maybe you have to wait a while for that. What do you think?
I think it's time for me to get into the gym with Condi. Mm. She's about 20 minutes ahead of me right now. Yeah. Look, 41, I know some deals may have to be cut, but as I learned when I ran the Texas Rangers, you don't want to be in such a hurry to make a deal that you do it too fast. You give my love to Mom.
Will do. Love to Laura.
I will. God bless.
Wise men say it looks like rain today. It crackled on the speakers and trickled down the sleepy subway train. For heavy eyes could hardly hold us, aching legs that often told us it's all worth it. We all fall in love sometimes. The full moon's bright, darkness filled the evening. We wrote it and I played it. Something happened, it's so strange, this feeling. Naive notions that were childish, simple tunes that try to hide it. But when it comes, we all fall in love sometimes. Did we, didn't we, should we, couldn't we? I'm not sure, cause sometimes we're so blind, struggling through the day, when even your best friend says, don't you find we all fall in love sometimes. Thank you.
Did we, didn't we, should we, couldn't we? I'm not sure, cause sometimes we're so blind, struggling through the day, when even your best friend says, don't you find that we all fall in love sometimes? We all fall in love sometimes. We all fall in love sometimes. We all fall in love sometimes. In love.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the warm, won't you?
Soft, listen to the warm.
It's like a big, big layer of tapioca pudding over here, isn't it? You just count the little dots. A chunk of Antarctic ice, about seven times the size of Manhattan, suddenly collapsed. No? Careless listener, I didn't say Manhattan suddenly collapsed. Don't get your hopes up. A chunk of Antarctic ice about seven times the size of Manhattan suddenly collapsed, putting an even larger portion of glacial ice at risk, scientists said this week. Satellite images show a runaway 160-square-mile chunk of ice that broke off the Wilkins Ice Shelf in western Antarctica. It started breaking off the end of February. It had been there for perhaps 1,500 years. The event is a result of global warming, says British Antarctic Survey scientist David Vaughan. Icebergs naturally break away from the mainland. Collapses such as this are unusual. They've been happening more frequently in recent decades, Vaughan says. The collapse is similar to what happens to glass when it's smashed with a hammer, he says. The rest of the Wilkins ice shelf, which is about the size of Connecticut, is holding on by a narrow beam of thin ice. Scientists worry it, too, may collapse. Larger, more dramatic ice collapses occurred in 2002 and 1995. Vaughan had predicted in 1993 that the Wilkins Shelf itself would collapse in 30 years. The most dramatic early consequences of the climate crisis are in the least accessible areas, North Pole and South Pole, says Al Gore. Since it's not on live TV, it doesn't command as much attention as it should. Hey, Al, why don't you put it on live TV on Current? Couldn't draw fewer viewers. Dateline New York, black carbon emitted from biomass burning, diesel engine exhaust, and cooking fires, widely used in India and China, has a warming effect in the atmosphere 3 to 4 times greater than prevailing estimates, according to scientists. In an upcoming journal in the Nature, upcoming article in the journal Nature Geoscience, Scripps climate and atmospheric science professor V. Ramanathan and University of Iowa researcher Greg Carmichael present their findings on the global warming effect that soot and other forms of black carbon have. Between 25% and 35% of the black carbon in the atmosphere comes from India and China, emitted from the burning of wood and cow dung in household cooking and through the use of coal to heat homes. What about some clean cow dung technology? What do you think? Soot and other forms of black carbon could have as much as 60% of the current global warming effect of carbon dioxide, the researchers noted. Per capita emissions of black carbon from the United States and some European countries are still comparable to those from South and East Asia, the paper says. So somebody here is burning dung, and I want some names. Any more of this? No. News of the warm, ladies and gentlemen. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And just one final item in the news that there's growing public awareness of sea-dumped chemical weapons. What? Did Saddam, he's landlocked. Some half dozen states bordering the Baltic Sea have raised concerns that plans for the construction of a natural gas pipeline on the Baltic seabed could release chemical weapons dumped into the Baltic after World War II. Also, the Australian government revealed a couple years ago that over 21,000 tons of chemical weapons munitions have been dumped off its coasts in the late 1940s. In the United States, sea-dumped CW munitions gained fresh notice following a series of reports in Virginia in late 2005. and Hawaiian officials have asked for investigations to determine the extent of the problem off the coast of Oahu. Want chemical weapons? Take a dive. Another quote from David Kaye's interview with Der Spiegel. Were you briefed by the German Foreign Intelligence Agency before you went to Iraq to investigate for WMDs? No way, he says. This is part of how toxic and how horrible the relationship was between the German intelligence and the CIA. The Germans never gave us Curveball's real name. Members of the CIA based in Munich thought they've had his name and went out and found someone in Germany with a very similar name. They found him and knocked on his door without approval by the German authorities. But it was the wrong guy. And he ended up calling the police. Yeah. Lucky he didn't end up in Syria. In a bag. Ladies and gentlemen, that puts this week's edition of the show in the bag with a hood on its head. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide, throughout Europe, over send 440 cable system in Japan. This is from memory. I'm not reading this. Around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of North America on the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz shortwave on the mighty 104 in Berlin on Sirius and XM satellite radio, soon to be one. Just a little bit of soul. Yeah, just a little bit of soul left there. So they can merge, and Whole Foods can buy wild oats, and we still have antitrust laws. Isn't that cute? Available as a free download at www.audible.com/LaShow. Available as a free podcast at kcrw.com if we get the technical stuff ironed out. And it would be just like getting the technical stuff ironed out if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? All righty, thank you very much. Mm-hmm. You can get the email address for this broadcast and find out the playlist of the music heard on this program and so much more by going to harryshearer.com. On the video side, I'll see you at mydamnchannel.com whenever you want it. A tip of the show chapeau to the Chicago and San Diego desks. And thanks as always to Pam Halstead. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.